What's up, everybody? Thanks for pressing play today. In today's episode of Nerd Nostalgia, you're going to catch me, Irvin, doing a solo review about the movie 1998 blockbuster hit starring our boy Antonio Banderas, Catherine Zeta-Jones, and of course, Mr. Anthony Hopkins. If you guessed it, it's The Mask of Zorro. Super excited to be doing this one. This is one of my just all-time favorites. I've watched this movie several times. Just a really great movie. Through and through, all around. Just really wonderful. Anyways, guys, do us a solid. Please head over to Apple Podcasts, drop that 5-star. Leave a quick rating for us. Tell us your favorite parts. Tell us who your favorite person is. Head over to Spotify, all those, download it there. It helps with the boosting of our viewership. Please do so. Also, I wanted to say a special thank you to everyone who has followed us on Instagram. We officially hit over 1,000, so we're going to be doing a giveaway pretty soon. I'm picking out all the items right now. Once I have everything in, I'm going to go ahead and ship it out to you guys and announce everything that you have to do for that. All right. As always, before we get started, here's a quick clip for you to enjoy.
Except it's about the movie, not a funny clip. Okay, here you go. Bye.
Leandro! Anga!
Choose your weapon.
Montero has invited every don in California to a banquet at his hacienda. If you want to be of service, you can join them as a spy.
I think I do not understand, sir.
You have passion, Alejandro, and your skill is growing. But to enter Montero's world, I must give you something which is completely beyond your reach.
Yes? And what is that?
Charm.
And what is that?
Convince Montero that you're a gentleman of stature, and he will let you into his circle.
Me? A gentleman? This is going to take a lot of work.
Yeah.
Hey, 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 welcome back to another episode of Nerd Nostalgia. Thank you for joining me today. Super pumped to get this movie going. I know you heard it in the description. I'm very excited for this movie. It's one of my all-time favorites. I remember watching it, like I said, a bunch of times growing up, and yeah, just excited to get into it. But yeah, let's go. Let's do this. What are we waiting for, right? So let's start off by, you know, kind of describing how we're going to go over everything. I've made a couple of adjustments for you guys, hoping that these additions will help get it going. This is based off of suggestions from people. So thank you. I appreciate the shout out and the direction. So we're going to always start off with production, right? We'll go over, you know, the directors, the screenplay writers, what this is based off of, that kind of stuff. Then we'll jump into the cast, discuss who they are, tie them into some nerd stuff. From there, that was a page flip if you heard it. We'll continue on with plot. From there, we'll jump over to budget ratings. Finally, we'll talk about runtime and where you can watch it, and then finish up with the most nostalgic scene. So yeah, that's maybe not the most nostalgic scene, but the most memorable, most nostalgic thing from the movie for me. But all right, enough dicking around. Let's jump into it. So the production. Super interesting story about the production. Steven Spielberg had actually initially developed the film for TriStars before the actual director, Martin Campbell. It was Steven Spielberg and like two other people or something. I'm not really sure who the other guys were, but obviously Steven Spielberg, kind of a big name. Would have been super interesting to see a movie from him or his adaptation of this. But directed by Martin Campbell, a New Zealander, a Kiwi. That's my accent of a Kiwi. That's terrible. So yeah, he was the one who directed it. He's done a lot of stuff. Some of the stuff that came noteworthy to me were The Mask of Zorro, obviously. The Shitty Legend of Zorro, we won't get into that. Maybe we will a little bit. GoldenEye, yes, 007. Casino Royale, another 007. And then this one was the one where I was like, oof, I can't believe he was the one. Green Lantern, yes, 2011's Green Lantern. What a terribly horrendous movie. So can't believe he would sign off on that after having produced this movie, which is super awesome. He also did another little small flick called The Foreigner with Jackie Chan. Pretty solid movie. Would recommend that. If you haven't seen it, definitely suggest you go out and watch that if you get a chance. It stars our boy Jackie Chan, like I said. And then that also, he also has, what's his freaking name? 007. Bosner? No. Pierce Brosnan. That's what it was. Almost had it. Whatever. But yeah, he's the bad guy in it. He's an Irish bad guy. So essentially, there's a terrorist act that happens. His daughter gets killed, not Brosnan's, goddamn, I can't even say his name right, but rather Jackie Chan's daughter, and so he goes on this vengeance, and like, it's basically a one-man war type of deal. Pretty good flick, not the best acting, obviously, but it was solid. I'd recommend it. If you're looking for something kind of fun to just jump into, that'd be a good one. Back to this. The screenplay was made by three fellas. Two come as a duo package deal from the looks of it, but the first one was John Eskow, not really sure how to pronounce that. But anyways, the other two guys are Ted Elliott and Terry Rossio. So very similar background for some of these guys. It looks like they've collaborated on a lot of the different movies. So they've done Aladdin, both the old school one and the new school. So the animated and the live action, Godzilla, Small Soldiers, Road to El Dorado. So another, animated flick there. They've done all of the Shreks, Pirates of the Caribbean, National Treasure, Legend of Zorro, obviously, and then Lone Ranger. So a lot of these movies, there's some that really stood out to me because I feel like they all have kind of that same flavor. So the ones that stood out to me are going to be the original Pirates of the Caribbean, National Treasure, Lone Ranger, and then maybe even a little Road to El Dorado. They all have, this is the same vibe that I get with Mask of Zorro as far as the writers are concerned. But I don't know, maybe I'm off, tell me if I'm wrong. But yeah. This was based on Zorro by, which I don't know if you know, guys. Zorro means Spanish and fox. Zorro means fox in Spanish. This was written by a guy named Johnson McCulley. He was an American pulp writer. If you don't know what pulp is, it's basically cheap magazines that they made back in the day from like the late 1800s, like 1890s through 1950s. They essentially would just use like not recycled paper, but like cheap wood material. Like it was really weird. But obviously he went on to have a very huge success with Zorro. So in his original debut, Zorro's debut in the 1919 novel, The Curse of Capistrano, 50 million copies have been sold. So he actually intended this to be a solo standalone, but because of the success of the films, specifically The Mark of Zorro, starring Douglas Fairbanks, it prompted him to write four more decades worth of this character. I actually didn't know that it was this old. Obviously, I knew I had some inclination, but I didn't realize. I thought it was from like the 40s, 50s. Didn't know it was a little bit earlier than that. And even then, I've gotten really big into comic book collecting. Shout out to anybody who I've bought from that if you're listening. Thank you. I'm obsessed right now. But there's actually a Django and Zorro cross mix freaking comic book that I'm probably gonna invest my money into because I think that's so cool. Django Unchained, the movie, absolutely loved it with Jamie Foxx, Quentin Tarantino flick. Zorro, obviously one of my favorite characters, getting into it right now. So the fact that they have both of them together, oh yeah, I'm definitely gonna hop on that bandwagon. But I digress. Let's get back to the movie here. The Mask of Zorro, July 17th, 1998. Coming up on an anniversary there, just a couple weeks out, 3 weeks out or so. So let's get into the cast. We know a little bit of background about the screenplay, the writers, the directors, that kind of jazz. Let's get into the cast. Catherine Zeta, it's a star-studded cast, man. Like, three solid actors, and then two other little lesser-known ones, but whatever. Catherine Zeta-Jones, as Elena, super, super awesome. So by doing a little research on this, and I didn't know this, the entire time I thought that Catherine Zeta-Jones was a Latin woman. And because of the fact that I watched this movie, I want to say it was a huge influence on that fact. But as it turns out, she's freaking Welsh and Irish, dude. I didn't fucking know that. Welsh and Irish? Like 50-50? Like not even a little remote Hispanic? Like were you adopted? But yeah, I'm telling you, all my life I thought she was a Latina. Again, probably because of this movie, but whatever. So you know her from so many things like Ocean's 12, Chicago, Intolerable Cruelty, The Phantom. That's another nerd movie there if you haven't seen that. Indiana Jones, and just so much more. Great actress. Absolutely love her. Beautiful, beautiful woman. Married to Michael Douglas. Yes, our Ant-Man, obviously, or the original Ant-Man, I should say, or Professor Pym, whatever, you know, the original Ant-Man before Ant-Man becomes Ant-Man. I don't know. Anyways, not Hank Pym, basically. So yeah, that's who she's married to. Again, she's been in a lot of movies. This was probably one of the first things that I remember her being in from my own personal recollection. Let's move on to Antonio Banderas. So he stars as Alejandro Murrieta. Murrieta? I want to say it's Murrieta. Murrieta or Murrietia? Hold on. Let me look this up real quick, guys. I was right. It's Murrieta. I just didn't remember the actual last name. My bad. Anyways, he stars in another movie, very similar ambiance. It's Desperado. If you've never seen that, it's basically about this old mariachi guy who essentially gets his wife killed, or his wife is killed by drug dealers. Finds out that it was his brother, falls in love with another woman, and just gunslings his way all around the fucking Mexican border. It's super fucking dope. Definitely recommend it. High action. You get to see Salma Hayek's boobies there for a little bit. So if you're into that, absolutely fucking love it. It was amazing. And then, of course, you get some awesome, awesome songs from it. Specifically, Canción del Mariachi that he sings. Oh, so good. That's one of my favorite songs. Shout out to Chase. We absolutely sing that together anytime we bro out. But moving along, aside from being this badass in Desperado, he was also in Once Upon a Time in Mexico. And then the first one to that movie was El Mariachi, if I remember correctly. But you'll recognize his voice from Puss in Boots and also in the Shrek movies. Fun fact, this guy sounds exactly like my father. So whenever I hear Antonio Banderas, maybe that's why I'm so, I don't know, why I have such a fondness of him, whatever it is, maybe because he sounds like my dad when my dad tries to speak English. But anyways, The 13th Warrior, he's in Assassins, starring Sylvester Stallone and him. Super solid movie from back in the day. Really liked that one. I used to watch it all the time too. And then of course with Sly in Expendables 3. So aside from this guy sounding exactly like my dad, I was really mesmerized by him in his movies back in the day, because as a young Latin kid, I saw this actor that was, you know, kind of looked like me and was on the big screen and was, you know, kissing these hot women. And so I was always really fascinated by him, and very happy to have that, you know, kind of idol that I grew up with back in the day. Never really went on to anything as far as my typical genre, you know, the superhero kind of nerdy genre. That's okay. You know, it is what it is, but I still always looked up to him as far as that respect is concerned, even though he's Spanish and technically not Latin. But I digress. Still kind of look like me. It is what it is. We're going to move on to, you know, young, old Anthony Hopkins. He was Diego de la Vega, which is the original Zorro. That's who it is. Don Diego de la Vega. He's basically this gentleman esquire. That's what Don means. So everybody knows a Don, but the actual translation is essentially like an esquire, a sir, a master. Before Anthony Hopkins was cast, they had actually wanted Sean Connery, and I want to say he might have even been cast, but then with the change of hands, as far as directors was concerned, they ended up getting Anthony Hopkins, and I'm glad they did, because he was a perfect Don Diego. Like, he nails it. I really like him, enjoy him as that character. The most famous thing that you're going to remember Anthony Hopkins from, obviously a great freaking actor, one of the best ever, is Dr. Hannibal Lecter in The Silence of the Lambs. Let's be real here. He was also in the entire trilogy of that, Hannibal and Red Dragon. But he's been in a lot of other stuff. I mean, he's been in Meet Joe Black. He was in Legends of Fall, Red 2, Beowulf, Bad Company with Chris Rock, I want to say. That's a pretty funny movie. He was also in a recent movie that I actually really liked. I didn't think I was going to enjoy it as much as I did, which is The Two Popes. It's the story of Pope Benedict and Pope Francis, and like kind of their friendship and like how everything unraveled as far as the changing of hands between the popes, because Pope Benedict was one of, I think, like two or three popes that was like, hey, I'm just going to retire. So that's why there was a period where there's two popes, when that normally doesn't happen, right? They usually do it until death. Finally, Anthony Hopkins' most notable role is obviously as Odin, Thor's dad in our Marvel movies. That's what we know him from. So that's how I'm going to tie him into it. All right, moving on to two other actors, a little lesser known. Stuart Wilson, he was the main antagonist, Don Rafael Montero, in The Mask of Zorro. But he's also he plays bad guys all the time. And so you may remember him from a small little flick called Lethal Weapon 3. He was Jack Travis in that. He was the bad guy in that. He's also Walker in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 3. Well, terrible movie. Don't need to see that. He's been in a lot of stuff, but those were the two most noteworthy things that I personally remembered him from. Finally, excited for this last one. Another smaller role, but still pretty prominent. I'm going to tie it back into our nerd stuff because that's what I do, right? Matt Letcher. He was Captain Harrison Love, Capitan Harrison Love. He is the second antagonist in The Mask of Zorro. He's basically the bad guy for Zorro. That's who he wants his vengeance upon, and we'll get into why he wants that. He's been in a bunch of movies as well. He has a pretty long career, but what I remembered him from was in The Flash. He was Eobard Thawne, the Reverse Flash from the Arrowverse. So I thought that was pretty cool tying that back in, because The Flash is my favorite character. Favorite villain is probably Eobard Thawne. He's a really cool one. Just the fact that you can, I don't know. He's just a cool character, but whatever. Let's move on to the plot summary, huh? We'll do a little quick plot summation, and then we'll really dive into where my thoughts are of the overall movie, all that kind of jazz. So in 1821, Don Diego de la Vega, he's the Spanish-born noble. He fights for the people. He's not your typical Don. Now, while he is a Don, rich guy, he's helping the people out. So a sort of Robin Hood for Latin Americans, if you will. He fights against the Mexican oppressors. His arch nemesis is Don Rafael Montero. He's a corrupt governor. Well, fun fact, the corrupt governor finds out that Don de la Vega is, in fact, Zorro. And so he uses this against him, and he goes to try to arrest him at his house. Well, they get into a little sword fight, and Don Rafael Montero was going to lose, and so whips out the old Glock and just shoots. But this is sad. This is the sad part. Don Diego de la Vega's wife gets in the way, and she is instantly killed. And so Don Diego de la Vega ends up getting imprisoned by Montero, his arch nemesis, gets locked away for 20 years. But in the process of this, you find out that Don Rafael Montero was in love with Esperanza. Esperanza de la Vega, Don Diego de la Vega's. I'm sorry, I keep saying Don and it's throwing me off. But that was his wife. And so she gets killed. You find out that the bad guy was in love with his wife. And so he ends up taking their daughter as his own and flees to Spain, but not before imprisoning him, like I said. 20 years go by. Our protagonist here at the beginning is locked up, hasn't had a reason to leave the jail, but Montero returns to California as a civilian, so he's no longer a governor. Well, this reappearance motivates the OG Zorro to break out of jail, and he does so in a super cool fashion. And he tries to kill Montero. At the place he's going to kill him at, his daughter appears, Elena. And so he decides not to kill her right there, which ends up working out in his favor because he encounters this thief who's getting drunk at a bar. And you come to find out this thief was one of two boys that saved young Don Diego de la Vega from his final battle right before being arrested. Before he did that, he gave him a pendant as a reward for helping him out. And so you come to find out that this is the same guy. Fate has them, you know, meeting together at this bar, at this random spot. And from there, you know, he ends up trying to become his protege. Well, in this conversation and during the movie, you already learned that Alejandro's brother was killed. He was the other boy that helped rescue him, you know, previously 20 years ago. And so fate brings them together, and Don Diego basically says, all right, you're going to be my protege. And then this is where the movie really starts to begin. Takes you through a training montage. It's funny. Takes you through some scene where he gets a new horse. Then it takes you to the point where he's like, oh yeah, he's a real Zorro, and then espionage type stuff, and then finally our big final act at the end. Not going to ruin this for anybody if you've already seen it. Obviously, I should have said spoiler alert because I gave away a big portion of the story. I'll give you my overall thoughts here in a bit. Let's move over to the budget and the ratings. So the budget was $95 million. Not bad. It ended up grossing $250.3 million at the box office. So a definite solid return for them. And that doesn't even include the other two movies that, the other movie that followed along with that. So definitely saw some more there. I don't know how much they invested in that other movie, and I'd have to look it up. Maybe I should do that one on Thursday since I've done this one, and that one's not good, but we'll see. Maybe. Moving on. Rated 6.7 out of 10 on IMDb, 63% Metacritic, 82% on Rotten Tomatoes, and of course, you're not here for any of that. You're here for the Nerd Nostalgia podcast reviews. You want to know how many Ewoks did Irvin give this movie? Now, I feel like I need to start breaking this down a little bit more. I think we need to add in, you know, our nostalgia factor. We need to add in action, dialogue, all that. Maybe we will, maybe we won't. But all in all, this movie to me is an 8.2 out of 9 Ewoks. So the reason being, again, I've watched this movie so many times. It's a Latin star, right? I thought Catherine Zeta-Jones was Hispanic too. And so I was like, oh, this is like a lot of Latin people in this. Super cool. Cool, cool, cool. Grow the, yeah, yeah. These people look like me. Awesome. One sounds like my dad. Even better. So that's basically why I would rate it so high. I've seen it several times. You know, the characters look like me. It's a great story, but then it's perfect for little kids because, yeah, it does have, you know, a lot of violence and sword fights and gunfights and that, you know, things of that nature. But it's also really packed well with a lot of humor during that. So it takes you from gunfight, sword fight to something funny or something funny during the gunfight. So I really like that a lot. The runtime is 137 minutes, so a little over 2 hours. And you can watch this on Netflix for free, or you can rent it on Vudu, Amazon Prime for $3, or on YouTube, iTunes, and Google for $4. Why you would go on the latter ones, I don't know. Just do the other ones. But yeah, let's jump into my final kind of thoughts on this. We're going to do final thoughts, and then we'll discuss the most nostalgic scene. Or maybe we should do that backwards. I don't know. Now, let's do the most nostalgic scene. I had that reverse. There's two for me. There's one scene where it was basically right after where we, that clip that I played at the beginning of him having to learn charm and all that stuff. It's this scene where Alejandro and Elena, who has just been having a full-on hard-on, lady boner, as we say sometimes. No one says that, just amongst my group of friends. And I apologize if I offended anybody. / I don't really care. Move along, fucking snowflake. But yeah, we do say lady boner sometimes. But yeah, she literally has just like it all out for her dude. Like he is everything she wants. Mysterious, wild, attractive, a great kisser. Little spoiler alert. But there's this dance scene where they've been having banter back and forth as far as politics are concerned and everything like that. And they have this awesome, amazing dance scene. I wish I could play that. You know what? I am going to play the clip of the music for you. Give me 1 second.
Would you care to try something more robust? Or do you feel unequal to the task?
No, on the contrary, Don Alejandro. I think only of your distaste for perspiration.
All right, I'm going to stop it there just because it's still like another 2 minutes to go of them just dancing. So the whole point of that scene was he was trying to get her father's attention because they were about to go sneak off and do, you know, evil bad guy plotting stuff. And he needed to espionage his way in, get in good with them. And so this caught his attention. It did his job. At the same time, he got to dance with Elena, which he is also attracted to. And so it's a really good scene. It's just a really great dance scene. I personally am a big dancer, and I absolutely love this. And so the fact that I remember this, and it's one of the most iconic scenes and iconic songs to me, that's where my nostalgia comes from. Now, the second scene also has these two together. Again, there's a lot of like sexual tension, a lot of flirtation that goes on kind of throughout the movie between these two characters. And in this first scene, this is actually after they've already danced together. So, or maybe it's before, I can't remember. I don't know. Anyways, not important. There's a duel, a sword duel between Elena and Alejandro in a stable. He had just stolen the plans to the mine. So I want to say it's afterwards. So he had just stolen the plans to the mine where they're digging up gold to pay Santana with his own money, which, you know, it's a no-no. So that's part of the plot, whatever. But she's basically been trained her entire life on how to sword duel, and she comes from money and stuff. And so they just have this absolutely epic sword fight. Obviously, our boy Zorro ends up winning, and at the very end, he kind of, he gives her a little smooch, and then he's like, don't move, cuts off her shirt, and she's super attracted to him. You feel the vibes. And so those are the two most nostalgic scenes for me. Again, it plays into both of them. They just have really good rapport together as actors. And I want to say that that's why I thought that she was Hispanic or Latin, just because, you know, Antonio Banderas is I knew he was a Hispanic and or speak Spanish at the very least. So yeah, that's the most nostalgic scene for me. Let's get into the final thoughts here, guys. We're rounding out this episode. It's been a good one. I've really enjoyed this movie. It just so happened that I watched it because the roommate hadn't seen it before. I was like, oh yeah, we got to watch this. So the origin story is just absolutely great. Like, you feel the anguish, you feel the brotherhood, you feel all these different feelings that you're supposed to feel that they're intending for you to do. As you heard right there recently, the music is just emotional. And I think that just speaks to me personally because I am Latin descent. And so some of the music, it hypes me up. But even then, in some of the scenes, they pick really good songs. I don't know if it's the trumpets that get it going, but it puts you perfectly into the mood of whatever that scene is. And what more can you say than Antonio Banderas is a stud, Catherine Zeta-Jones is a smoking hottie, and Anthony Hopkins is just a wonderful actor. That's what you're getting in this movie for sure. I already talked about Catherine Zeta-Jones, aka Elena's lady boner that she has for our boy Zorro. Which, what does it mean again, guys? Fox. Anyways, there's humor. This is the best thing I think about the movie. The action sequences are so, so good. The sword fights, the gunfights, everything, the horse battles, like it's all fucking good. But the humor that they tie into it to kind of slice away from that is perfect. It's perfectly timed. They do it, like I said before, in the middle of the fights. The quick quips that you get is just, it's perfect. It's really a solid movie. You know, I have it at an 8.2. I might bump it up to 8.4 because I really dig on that. The humor is just absolutely perfect. There's a couple negatives though. I'm not going to lie. It's not that it's a perfect movie, and that's why I wouldn't give it a solid 9. So there's a couple things that stand out to me. There's a bunch of stuff that always happens in a movie. You're like, oh, that shit's unrealistic. One thing was he jumped from basically like a 2-story building onto the ground because his horse moved, and he just fucking gets up like nothing. I'm like, nope, motherfucker, your leg would probably have been broken, at the very least a twisted ankle. But, you know, that's little stuff. One of the things is the actual plot. How does my guy go from being a fucking drunk to an absolute sword god, like just in a matter of a few days? That kind of annoyed me. Like, they should have shown that it had been months or something to kind of like get me past that. But yeah, that really annoyed me. It just makes it unbelievable. Just showcase that time a little bit more, you know, show us that it's been months or years or I don't know, something. But I didn't like that. And then, of course, at the very end, they win, right? Because it's a good guy movie. My dude just fucking, you know, just zero fucks given about his identity, just walking around with the people, no mask on. It's like, what the fuck, dude? You're endangering all of your fucking family, your future kids, your friends. But yeah, those are the two things that really pissed me off. All in all, guys, this is a solid movie. You can watch this on Netflix, like I said. It's a mixture of action and humor, and it's just perfectly done. Is it a perfect movie? No, for sure. I've yet to find a perfect movie. But it's pretty damn close. I highly recommend it. A lot of fun. I would say kids up to, 9, 10 years old can probably watch this and up. If your kid's super, you know, smart and stuff and can separate life and fake stuff, then maybe a little bit younger, you know, 8, 7, something like that. But that's it, guys. Thank you so much for joining me today. I'm going to wrap this up. I always, always appreciate you guys coming in here and just hanging out. Thank you to all the fans. Thank you to all the new fans. Again, drop the 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. It helps broaden our viewership. Go over to our nerd.nostalgia Instagram. We're selling stuff. We're going to be giving stuff away. You can see all the posts that we have. We put up nerd news. We put up all the nostalgic toys that we grew up with. So it's a lot of fun. We put up comic books for sales, that kind of stuff. But yeah, find us on YouTube at Nerd Nostalgia Podcast. On Facebook, same thing, Nerd Nostalgia Podcast. The main thing is through Instagram, though. I do a lot of stuff on there. And yeah, that's pretty much it, guys. Thank y'all so much for joining me. I hope y'all have a wonderful day and or night. And remember, stay nerdy, my friends.